Hi, my name is Jerry Lee, and I'm old enough to be retired. I'm not going to give the real age away. You're kidding if you think I am. Today's date is Wednesday, March 4th, 2020. We are in Fresno, beautiful California, and I am with Donald Priest and Brian Harley, and they are both my former employees and very good friends.
Okay, my name is Don Priest, P-R-I-E-S-T, just like a priest. I'm 74. I don't care. It's good. I'm happy to be 74. Today is Wednesday, March 4th, 2020. We're in Fresno, and I'm here with Jerry Lee and Brian Harley, who are my former friends, colleagues, and in one case, a former student.
I'm Brian Harley. I'm 35. Well, if you could see how much gray hair I have, you might think I'm older. Today's date is Wednesday, March 4th, 2020, and we're in Fresno, California, and I'm with Don Priest and Jerry Lee, and yeah, we're all former colleagues and friends, and Don was my former professor.
Let's kick this off by explaining that we all had something to do with creating Community Media Access Collaborative.
Yeah.
I found out, how many years ago was it that I found out that I was going to be the executive director? And I had no staff, and we had no facility.
Yeah, I guess that would have been 2011 is when you transitioned into that role from just being a board member.
Yeah, that's true, huh?
Yeah, earlier 2011, yeah, because I retired. I retired in December from Fresno State, and then basically just transitioned over here.
So. Yeah, I remember at your retirement party out at Fresno State.
The first one?
Yeah. That I stood up, you said you were retiring, and I said, I'm taking him because I need someone to head up my education department at CMAC.
Yeah.
And Brian, I had my eye on him all along because he just knew everything. And it scared me that if I didn't get him, somebody was going to. So I grabbed him. And then the other part of the equation was hiring a chief engineer, and that was Terry Dolph.
Yeah. If we could have four people with us, he'd be here too.
He'd be here too. Yeah. Yeah. Great guy. But I hired these gentlemen, and then I had a staff, and we still didn't have a facility or any equipment.
Yeah.
Community, Brian, talk about what Community Media Access Collaborative is, well, what our purpose is.
Yeah, well, we're a nonprofit organization that's really all about empowering people in our community to be able to share their stories, you know, using media. The idea being that there's, you know, people in our community who are not being heard for whatever reason. You know, they can't afford access to these resources, or they've just never been exposed to it, never been given an opportunity to communicate this way. So helping those people connect with what we have to offer, and hopefully sort of connecting our community better by having these conversations, you know, through media.
How many members now?
650 members now.
Really? Yeah.
That's just incredible.
I remember when we were just first starting up, we went to San Jose to kind of see what another media center looked like, and they said they had around 600 members, and we just thought, boy, are we ever going to get to that point?
And, surprise.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah.
But can you remember, like, when was the very first, how did this all start for you, you know, getting involved with CMAC? I mean, it was many years before you were the executive director.
I was the vice president of Valley PBS, the PBS station for all of Central California, which is right across the street from our facility, our CMAC facility. And I came to, strangely enough, a meeting of individuals who Sue Buskey came to town. And Sue is the quintessential angel, I guess, of media centers nationwide.
Yeah.
And she came here to give a presentation, and I came across the street because it was in this same building.
Oh, right, when our building was the Metropolitan Museum.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That very first community meeting was here.
And I thought at the time, this is so cool. And, of course, it came with lots of people going, oh, this is just like the movie where...
Oh, Wayne's World?
Wayne's World, Wayne's World, Wayne's World. And it's like, no, it's not. No, it's not. This is serious stuff. And...
what year do you think that was?
That was, I think, 2008, I believe. 2008.
It had to have been earlier, though, because DIVCA, the law in California surrounding cable franchising, was in 2006.
Oh, well, then it was before that, so it must have been 2005.
Sue was helping the city of Fresno kind of negotiate the cable franchise with Comcast, and that was before DIVCA became a thing.
Yeah.
Like, the city of Fresno hired her, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it could have, it was probably even earlier than 2006.
Yeah, it could be. When you get to be my age, time becomes irrelevant, so...
But, I mean, you guys were working for a very long time to make CMAC a reality.
Yeah.
You know, probably we had 10 years before we even opened.
Group of conveners, and Don and I were both conveners. Terry Dolph, our chief engineer, was too at the time.
What do you remember, like, what about it made you want to get involved? Because, I mean, you were over at PBS.
Yeah.
And, like, why did you want to be part of this?
Because... I wanted to go out of my career in a blaze of glory. No, it was so exciting to be part of something so innovative. And like you said, this community, every community, but this community, Fresno, Clovis, and Environs, has so many people who have fabulous stories to tell and no way to tell it. And with CMAC, we were going to get not only money to get a facility, we were going to get equipment, and we were going to get the opportunity to give people a voice. And it was just too tempting to pass up. I'd been at PBS for 13 years, and, you know, once you do one auction, TV auction, you've done them all. And this was just a new challenge, and I just wanted to be involved.
Because community media, what we call community media now, which has been known for like 30, 40 years, is public access television.
Right.
I mean, that's been around in other communities for a really long
time. For a long time, yeah.
Because I was especially back east.
Yeah, but really not here, at least in the way that have it now.
Not in the way that's going on here, no. Because Comcast, went through Comcast, Media One.
Cable.
Continental Cable, that's when I first came here, it was Continental Cable. And how I understood community access media was that the staff at the channel, they dictated what the programming was.
Yep.
They decided. I mean, community people were involved in the production, and you could go in and maybe pitch an idea for a show, but if the staff didn't want that show...
It wasn't true public access.
No, it wasn't true public access. Yeah. So that was the difference between what was and what CMAC filled, what that niche became.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I got involved because the university said to. Because I was working on campus. I
never knew that.
I was teaching.
Really? I thought he really wanted to be part of it.
Well, once I got there and saw what it was, like, oh, this is pretty interesting. This is cool.
Do you remember how you first heard about it, or it was someone at the university that told you?
As I recall, it was the dean of the Arts and Humanities, which was Luis Costa at the
mm-hmm,
time,
mm-hmm.
Called me into his office, and in his way of saying things, he said, "Don, we have this thing that you are going to be a part of," and so I went to a meeting. It all starts with a meeting.
Yeah,
it always starts with a meeting. And I went to the meeting and listened to everybody talk and came back to Luis and reported. And he asked me, "Do you think this can work?" And I said, "Yeah, I think it could work, but it's going to take some work." And then he says, "Okay, you're on the committee."
You just reminded me you were the one, Don, that told me about Brian.
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
And
I told you about all the staff.
Yeah. Yeah, but some of the things were, you know.
Well, yeah. I won't mention his name. But.
Yeah. Brian, I met at a coffee shop.
Yeah, we met at Starbucks.
Starbucks.
To talk about what is this thing called CMEC.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, most of our early meetings were in a restaurant because
right.
we didn't have an office.
No, not yet. We were meeting at Starbucks and
Denny's.
And
yeah.
Yeah. All these random places.
The one restaurant where I forgot to turn my car off. And
yeah.
it sat running for 2.5 hours. Well, yeah. And nobody stole it. That shows you the quality of the car.
And the people in Fresno, of
yeah.
course.
Yeah. Of course.
And the interest you had in the meeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, Brian was my student when I was at Fresno State.
Yeah.
And he was one of the, because we used to have the production office, and that's where the equipment was that the students would check in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my way of dealing with it, because when I first got the job, they wanted me to be responsible for that. And I tried, but I can't, you know, it wasn't what I was wanting to do. So I got them to agree to let me hire a couple of student assistants. And so they were the ones who would come in and run the office. And Brian was one of those students, along with Andrew.
Yeah. Tosky.
Andrew Tosky.
Would eventually work at CMEC with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we won't mention his real name, but, you know.
He had a delightful nickname.
Yeah. Delightful nickname.
Yeah.
That would not be appropriate
for
this program.
I don't think so.
Yeah. But that's how I got to know Brian. And he was really, you know, one of the better kids. He was always dependable. He always did really great work. You know, he would answer any questions, solve any catastrophe that was happening. And he went to L.A., and
yeah.
after graduation, then he came back, and then about the time that he was coming back, I was getting involved at CMEC,
mm-hmm.
and when we started looking for staff, he was the first person that I recommended because right. I knew that he would be a great resource for this job.
I remember, well, yeah, because I first met you, I took your class, MCJ
113,
beginning intro to studio production,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And then I sort of found out about the B Sharp Video Club,
right?
And got involved with that. I think my sophomore year, and I think even before I graduated, I had kind of heard of this thing called CMEC because we were, as students, we were contributing. I think it was around 4 hours of content every Monday that would air on Channel 96.
Yeah, but that wasn't
which
that
was
wasn't,
called. It wasn't CMEC
wasn't
yet.
Wasn't CMEC.
It was
yeah.
like the Fresno Channel.
The Fresno Channel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. I think city council meetings would still air on the channel, but it was all being run through Channel 18 PBS
right.
at the time.
Right.
And as a student, I just got like 4 hours of a 4-hour block on Mondays, maybe Mondays and Wednesdays.
I think it was just Monday. Yeah.
That. We
filled this 4 hours.
Right. And so I remember calling Channel 18 and saying, "Our feed's ready. I'm about to press play."
With the link.
Boom,
yeah.
there it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we had a microwave link or something.
A microwave link, yeah.
And so that was kind of my first exposure to, I guess, what CMEC was going to become and kind of got me interested in being involved. And I know I would always bug you and call you like, "Do you have a job for me yet?" I'm graduating here pretty soon. I moved down to LA because I guess like a lot of kids that came out of that MCJ program, at least for video, TV, film production, we were the movie kids.
You know? Right,
we
right.
wanted to go work in the movies or go work in the industry. So you know, I moved to LA just to see what that was all about, but you know, it didn't work out for me, or didn't my I found out my interests weren't really there.
Yeah.
And yeah, when I came back in town, I was still asking you, hey, what's going on with that CMAQ thing? Mm-hmm. I think we were working the muscular dystrophy telethon, that KMPH was doing.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, how's it going? I'm back in town now. How's CMAQ? Did you guys ever get that going? Because there was a lot of points where you thought, oh, the studio is going to be opening in a year. But it hadn't quite come together yet. You were still searching for potential locations.
Right. That was a search.
We were going to be at Fresno State.
Right.
Until we found out that some of the deans didn't want us there.
Well, I think the original idea was that it was going to go up in the education building.
Right.
Up on the third,
Kremen building.
In the Kremen building, mm-hmm. in that studio that they have.
Yeah.
And that was the initial plan. And we were moving in that direction, but then things happen.
Boy, did they happen.
And then, so we weren't going to go up there. So then we kind of regrouped and said, well, maybe we could put it in Studio A, you know, in the main TV studio where the educational, where our program was, MCJ. Then we had several meetings about that.
Yeah.
And that didn't work. And that's when we really started scrounging around, and then the deal materialized to come here, and actually that turned out to be the best option.
It turned out to be really good because the city had this huge empty building, the Met Museum, went bankrupt,
mm-hmm.
and they needed to have somebody in here. So
the Met went bankrupt. And the city had guaranteed their loan to renovate the building, because the building's almost 100 years old now. Built in 1922 as the home of the Fresno Bee, but then was the Metropolitan Museum for, I think, close to 30 years until they closed. But, the timing was just right. You guys were looking for a spot, and the city needed a tenant.
And some of the things I asked the city for, in the back of my mind, I was going, it'd be crazy to give us this. And they did, because they really wanted us in here. So it was financially a really good deal. And it got us off and running. My first exposure to the building was, I think, a November night. I came across the street from Valley PBS, and I had gotten the key to this side door, and it was already getting dark, so it must have been 5-ish o'clock in the afternoon. And I walked in, and I went up the stairs, and to first look at it, you'd think, this isn't going to work. There's too many walls. But the walls would come tumbling down, but I'm in there and it's starting to get dark, and I'm all by myself in this huge building, and I hear this, and I went, oh crap, I'm dead. There's somebody in here and they're going to kill me. But we had a freight elevator that had a mechanical mind of its own, and every once in a while it would just move 6 inches.
It still has a mind of its own.
Yeah, it does. It does. But that...
It is a little disconcerting when you're all alone in the building at night and hear that.
Right.
I left really fast. Really fast.
Well, it's a beautiful building.
Oh, boy.
And, CMAQ is occupying two floors, and there's still two floors above us and one below.
Yeah.
And, those top floors are just beautiful. I have a beautiful panoramic view of the city.
Gorgeous.
I always thought maybe we could move, do something up there, use that space.
Good.
Maybe someday we can.
Still could happen. Yeah. But the plan was that we wanted to make CMAQ affordable to everyone. And so the board of directors decided to charge members $50 a year for everything, for the use of all of the equipment, for the use of the of the main studio, for all of the lessons. And I had a guy one time say, why do you charge so much, $50? And I said, when was the last time you took a date and went to the movies? One movie with popcorn and soda pop. And this is a whole year for $50. And that's been very successful.
Well, we found, even among our other colleagues in California who are doing community media, they charge a lot more for their resources. You know, it isn't just a membership fee. It's a charge to take a class, or it's a charge to take out this equipment or use a studio. And I think we were really, and the board was really intentional about making sure that it was, you know, that money wasn't a barrier for someone getting involved and being able to tell their story. And
adamant about it. And you know, there's a lot of areas in California too with media centers that are affluent. And they could probably get away with it. But here, even our high schools, you know, we have, I always go back in my mind to, well, we got a van, we got a mobile production van. And that changed a lot of things, because now we could go out to high schools and to colleges and teach. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think the first school we went to was Sunnyside High School. And that's one of the poorest schools anywhere around. I mean, it's like Appalachia. They have beautiful building, beautiful facilities, but the kids predominantly come from, you know, families that just don't have a lot. And how big was our first? We were teaching sports production.
Yeah, football.
Teaching them how to produce a football game, a high school football game. How many were in that first class?
Oh, there was probably,
what, 15 or so?
Yeah, 15.
And you all did such an incredible job teaching them how to do that. They, I remember the first game, I was out there like a proud papa, you know, like a peacocks, kind of moving around. And they did everything. They ran all the cables. They ran the cameras. They ran the audio booth and the switcher and all of that. The only thing they didn't do was the announcers, because they just didn't feel qualified, I think, to do that.
Right. We've since tried that, though, with certain sports. Because, hey, some kids want to be broadcast announcers.
Of course, absolutely. Give them the chance.
I remember those first games with Sunnyside. And
But we did
getting there 3 hours or 5 hours early and you know, struggling. I mean, it was a great experience. And the kids really learned. But it took all that time to get ready. And even just before kickoff, we're still not ready. So it was a challenge.
That first year, though, they won an award.
National competition.
With the Alliance for Community Media.
First prize.
For student sports broadcasting. So, right off the bat, they were doing a great job.
And then I knew, I mean, right then it was, this is working, and it's just going to get better and better and better.
So what's your fondest memory of CMEC? Or what's the thing that, I don't know, it's, you cherish the most in memories of CMEC, your experience with CMEC. What stands out?
It's hard to pick one.
A couple.
I don't know, because we've had so many different sorts of milestones, you know, and some you are like milestones for the organization. Some are like your own personal milestones. But, well, I'm particularly proud of, you know, a program that we just did last summer. Because for a couple summers now, we've been, we've had these little summer camps for young people interested in, you know, digital media. And these are kids who are younger than who we probably generally serve with a lot of our programs and services. You know, the normal workshops that we have every week kind of cater to maybe high school age and older people. But with this summer camp, we were kind of looking at how do we get involved with younger kids, like, you know, 8 years old to 13. And, you know, so it was a summer camp where they came in for a week, 4 hours a day, and we put a camera in their hands and let them create a short film. And just the feedback that we got from the parents about how much their kids enjoyed this, I mean, it was just really rewarding. I know, like, one of the people that got involved that very first year was like a it was a vendor of ours, a guy from Comcast.
Yeah, an engineer.
Lives up in Stockton.
Yeah.
And he heard about it and was like, I'm going to sign up my granddaughter. And we're like, you live in Stockton. You're going to drive down to Fresno to enroll her in this week-long summer camp? He's like, yeah. So he drove down, and I think they stayed somewhere here for the week. And they just she had an awesome time doing it. It was just incredible. But what really I'm proud of that happened last year was we changed up our model a little bit. So it had been, you know, the parent or guardian paid a fee for the kid to be involved. But we changed it this time, and we decided to partner with the Fresno Housing Authority. And went out and got a grant that would pay, you know, for everybody's time. So the students didn't have to pay any fee. And the students they targeted for the program were all living in Fresno housing properties. So lower income, you know, Section 8 housing. A lot of them outside of the Fresno area and some of the poorer, more rural, like farming communities, they got bussed in for 3 weeks. And half the time we did digital media and half the time we partnered with Bitwise, which teaches like computer programming. So the kids learned computer programming for the other half of the camp. And so it's like, this is so much closer to what I wanted the summer camp to be, really making sure that we're helping the people who need our help the most. Mm. Not just people who can afford to put their kid in a camp, but people who can't afford that, finding a way to make that possible. So I don't know, that sticks out to me as just like a program of ours that started one way and evolved to be even better, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of who we're serving.
Jerry?
I think... And like Brian said, that's a tough question because there were so many positives. In fact, early on, we celebrated everything. We celebrated getting the equipment to work.
Yeah.
Yes.
In fact, our grand opening where the mayor came and other dignitaries came and cut the ribbon.
It was a Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th and the most... hellacious thunderstorm.
Right, yeah.
In fact, it flooded into the basement and shorted out all of our broadcast lines. So
yeah, we were only on AT&T at that time.
Yeah,
Comcast hadn't hooked us up yet with our channels, and that rainstorm that flooded the basement wiped out our connection to AT&T. So as all the dignitaries are here cutting the ribbon, the channel goes down.
Yeah. Oh man, that was fun. In retrospect, I think what I'm proudest of is just the overall growth of the organization, particularly the staff. I have raved about this staff, and I think I raved about him to the point where some of the staff people started thinking, you know, well, this guy's blowing smoke up. But I wasn't. I mean, we handpicked everybody on board the staff, and they, with almost no exception, well, there was a bump or two along the way, but the staff is just incredible, not only with their knowledge of the mission and their acceptance of the mission, but their knowledge of broadcasting, of the equipment, of all of the steps it takes to produce something and get it on a channel. They acknowledge that they're constantly learning and growing, and it's just incredible, really, for me to see it. I laugh. There were times, not always, mind you, but there were times when we had staff meetings, and they'd start talking technically, and I'd sit there with a wise look on my face and nod my head. I had no idea what they were talking about. But I knew they did, and that was the important part.
Well, and, you know, nobody works at a nonprofit organization to get rich.
That's for sure.
So, you know, I mean, everybody who works at CMAC, they work there because they really care about what we're doing, and they care about our mission, and they're passionate about it. So I think that's just a recipe for, you know, a really good staff.
Yeah.
Because you know, they want to be there.
And they've been here a long time.
Yeah. Well, most prideful thing about CMAC is that most of those kids were my former students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all your fault.
Yeah.
In fact,
just about all of them.
I can't think of anybody, unless there's somebody new wasn't Fresno State.
No, yeah, they're all Fresno State. Yeah.
Even Terry graduated.
Even
from
Terry
Fresno
graduated.
State.
Our engineer
in the
graduated. 70s. From
I graduated.
State.
From
but that
Nebraska.
Was that was always the most rewarding thing for me was that, you know, they were all my kids.
Yeah.
You know, and they really have all blossomed. It's been great to watch them grow. You know, just speaking as an educator, it's like go do it. You know, you've got it now.
Well, it shows a great job you did, and everybody knows that, and they acknowledge that. And that's one of the reasons that I had to have you. And you came in and you formed all of our curriculum and got us off the ground, man. That was big.
It was, yeah. But then it was my turn to step away. See. Okay. Because like you said, they started talking about things I had no idea what they were talking about. So,
yeah,
okay,
boy.
Okay, you go do it now.
Yeah, that's when I knew, too.
That's when
time
I knew.
To go
time
away.
Time to go away, yeah.
And it's why we still have, strong partnerships with Fresno State, too. And we still have interns that come out of that MCJ department that we all graduated from because, you know, we know the caliber of students that come out of that program,
yeah.
And they're hungry to go to work.
They are hungry to work.
Yeah. But what about you, Don? I guess that was your fondest memory.
I mean, that's my most prideful thing, my most rewarding thing. But then, you know, I've always loved working on trucks. You know, to go out and do the live production has always been one of my favorite things to do. It's a process.
It is.
You know, the content, the program doesn't mean much to me, but the actual doing of it, you know, setting it all up, laying the cables, you know, choosing the camera positions, you know, getting sound clean, all that stuff. That's, to me, that's the joy of television,
right.
was the craft. You know, a lot of times I didn't really enjoy what the program was, but the fact that we got up there and we did it and it worked. You know, that was always a big thing for me. So to be able to do that on a semi-regular basis and train kids along the way.
Yeah.
That was a joy.
That's something I really enjoy too. And I think that's sort of like still is the goal of the organization. It's not about like necessarily making the best program. It's about having an experience, like a good experience. And it's about building that craft, and learning and improving. Not everybody's going to go make Emmy award winning TV show, but you're probably going to learn something that's going to change your life in some way.
And you see the incredible enthusiasm of the members.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes they're so enthusiastic, it's like you need to tie a rope around their ankles to keep them on the ground because they just love what they're doing, and sometimes they can't even believe that they have that opportunity because it's something they never dreamed they'd be able to do.
Yeah, I know. I would have, when I was that age, I would have killed to have something like CMAC in my life. You know, I was a high school age kid, so it's just really rewarding to be able to bring that to people and connect people to that now.
And for the future, what do you see for the future of CMAC, Brian?
Well, you know, I think for community media organizations like CMAC, we're more relevant now than ever before. People might point to Wayne's World and say, you know, public access is an outdated thing, concept, but really it's about community storytelling and local stories rising to the top. And we need that right now more than ever.
Yeah.
You know, what's the changing funding model for local newspapers and even other forms of media? You're seeing the local voice disappearing in so many communities.
Yeah.
Smaller communities where maybe the local community media station is the only form of local information. You know, fortunately, right now in Fresno, we're not at that point. And so there's, you know, other ways that we can contribute. But I think that's just going to keep shrinking and shrinking. And
yeah,
so
I agree.
Making sure that there's a place where the community can come and have a voice is going to just be more and more important as time goes on. And our challenge is just going to be, again, like the newspaper industry, finding a way to fund what we're doing, you know, because the media landscape is changing and we have to adapt. But I, you know, again, I think there's challenges ahead, but, you know, the future is bright. And I think what we're doing is really important. And that's not going to change.
No, I couldn't agree more. It's, and I'm just very proud that I had a small part to do with, you know, with...
You had a big part to do.
Well,
both of you did.
And the great lunches.
And the great lunches.
Yeah, the great lunches.
And the single-topping pizzas.
Yes. Oh, my. I guess that's about it. This is fun, reminiscing about something so powerful and so incredibly special that we can offer the community. And
it's... What you all did putting this organization together is hard to do, too. I mean, so many projects like this, I'm sure, fail at some point. But the fact that you guys did it is...
Well, you did, too. You were
well,
just
we all did it.
Yeah.
But the fact that we're still here, you know, 8 years later doing it, is something to be said
for
that.
We had our challenges, but darn it, we did it.
And we're still going.
Still going. Okay, I think that's just about everything. You now know the entire story of Community Media Access Collaborative in Fresno, California.
Now give her 10 seconds of silence.